A remote island off the Devon coast, 10 strangers with dark secrets, a mysterious host who never appears. And Then There Were None begins with this perfect setup for murder. Each guest arrives believing they know their host, though the signatures on their invitations are suspiciously illegible. There's Justice Wargrave, a retired judge, Vera Claythorne, hired as a secretary, Philip Lombard, an adventurer paid to attend, Emily Brent, a rigid older woman, General MacArthur, supposedly meeting old friends, Dr. Armstrong, examining someone with nerves, Anthony Marston, a reckless young man, and William Bloor, a detective in disguise. Upon arrival, they discover their hosts, Mr. and Mrs. Owen, are absent, with only the newly hired butler Rogers and his wife to greet them. Each room contains a framed copy of the nursery rhyme Ten Little Indians, describing figurines dying one by one in various ways. After dinner, a recorded voice suddenly booms through the room, accusing each person of specific murders they've committed but escaped justice for. Rogers drops the coffee tray in shock while his wife collapses. The guests realize they've been lured under false pretenses by someone who knows their darkest secrets. Judge Wargrave deduces that UN Owen is a play on unknown. They've been brought together by a dangerous, calculating mind. That evening, Anthony Marston chokes and dies from cyanide poisoning. One of the 10 Indian figurines disappears, echoing the nursery rhyme. One choked his little self, and then there were nine. The next morning, Mrs. Rogers is found dead from an overdose of sleeping medication. A second figure vanishes. One overslept himself, and then there were eight. Despite a thorough search of the barren island revealing no hiding places, General MacArthur is later found dead by the sea, killed by a blow to the head. A third figurine disappears. Judge Wargrave takes control of the frightened group and presents his conclusion. Mr. Owen is not some mysterious outsider. Mr. Owen is one of us. He methodically analyzes each death, emphasizing that any of them could be the killer. The remaining seven guests regard each other with growing suspicion as Wargrave warns they're trapped with someone following the nursery rhyme with deadly precision. As a fierce storm isolates them, the remaining guests spiral into paranoia. Vera suspects Dr. Armstrong, citing the medical knowledge required for both deaths. Lombard theorizes Judge Wargrave has become a self-appointed executioner, while Bloor focuses on Emily Brent, whose religious conviction might frame murder as divine retribution. Tension escalates when Rogers discovers the scarlet bathroom curtain missing. That night, they barricade doors, gather weapons, and secure the remaining Indian figurines before bed. The next morning, Rogers is found murdered in the washhouse, struck from behind with a meticulously cleaned axe. Vera recites, "Six little Indian boys playing with a hive. A bumblebee stung one, and then there were five." Later, Emily Brent falls unusually drowsy while alone, fixating on what appears to be a bee at the window, her final vision. The others discover her body rigid, marked by a hypodermic needle puncture and the scent of cyanide. A real bumblebee hovers nearby, while another broken Indian figure completes the scene. The survivors discover Armstrong's syringe and Lombard's revolver missing. Judge Wargrave organizes a search for weapons and implements body searches. They lock all medications in a chest under constant watch. The five remaining guests, Wargrave, Armstrong, Lombard, Bloor, and Vera, agree to stay together in the drawing room. Their appearances reflect their deteriorating mental states. Wargrave withdrawn, Bloor feral, Lombard predatory, Vera dazed, and Armstrong unraveling. Their system fails when Vera retreats to her bedroom and finds seaweed hanging from her ceiling. As it touches her throat, she screams in terror. This cruel reminder of Cyril Hamilton's drowning sends her into hysterics, requiring brandy to calm her. During the chaos, Judge Wargrave disappears. They find him in the dining room, slumped in a chair, wearing a makeshift scarlet robe from the missing curtain. A gunshot wound marks his forehead, with a burn resembling a judge's wig. Another Indian figure has vanished, matching the verse. four little Indian boys going out to sea, a red herring swallowed one, and then there were three. The four survivors barricade themselves overnight. At midnight, Bloor finds Armstrong missing, with a smashed dining room window and only three Indian figures remaining. Morning arrives with sunshine after the storm. While searching for Armstrong, Bloor returns to the house alone. Lombard and Vera hear a thud and find Bloor dead, his head crushed by a marble bear clock from Vera's mantelpiece, fulfilling the rhyme. Three little Indian boys walking in the zoo, a big bear hugged one, and then there were two. Along the cliffs, they discover Armstrong's drowned body wedged between rocks. The realization hits, one of them must be the killer. In a tense confrontation, Vera shoots Lombard through the heart when he lunges at her. Alone with nine dead bodies, Vera returns to the house and finds a noose hanging in her bedroom. Mesmerized by guilt over deliberately letting a child drown to benefit her lover, she kicks away the chair beneath her, fulfilling the final verse. One little Indian boy left all alone. He went and hanged himself, and then there were none. Scotland Yard confronts a baffling case. 10 people dead on an isolated island with no evidence of outside involvement. The scene presents contradictions. Armstrong's body dragged above the high tide line posthumously, Lombard shot with his own gun bearing Vera's fingerprints, Vera found hanging with the chair she supposedly kicked away neatly against the wall, Bloor crushed under a marble clock pushed from Vera's window. The island was completely storm isolated, searches found no hiding places, and boat services confirmed no arrivals or departures during the critical period. In this closed circle of death, where each victim's demise eliminates them as the killer and no outsider could have remained on the island, who orchestrated the final murders? A manuscript found in a bottle reveals Justice Wargrave as the orchestrator of all murders. Facing terminal cancer and possessing both justice-driven and sadistic tendencies, he created what he considered the perfect crime. Wargrave methodically followed the nursery rhyme pattern. He convinced Dr. Armstrong to help fake his death, then pushed Armstrong into the sea. From hiding, he executed the remaining murders, dropping a marble clock on Bloor, watching Vera shoot Lombard, and arranging her bedroom to drive her to suicide. For his own death, he rigged an elastic cord mechanism to conceal his revolver after shooting himself. His motive combined artistic pride in creating an unsolvable mystery and a pitiful human wish that someone should know just how clever I have been. His confession reveals a meticulous killer executing justice by his own twisted moral code. Christie's masterpiece endures by confronting uncomfortable questions about justice and human nature, with the island's claustrophobic setting mirroring how each character remains trapped within their moral failings.